Glad that you're here today, especially if you're new today. Welcome to Bear Creek Church. And it's kind of a yucky day out there today, but we are nice and warm in here today. So I'm glad that you're here. You know, Facebook, anybody on Facebook, you ever heard of that? Facebook has changed how we relate to people, hasn't it? You just think about when it came out, and it seems like it's been out forever, but it hasn't been out for that long. But it's just changed how we relate to people. We get to follow what people are doing. I think that's the positive part of it. We can kind of, some people give updates. I don't know about so much the daily updates. Yeah, today I got up and I had a donut and it's a good day. I don't know about that, those kinds of things. But it's kind of neat to hear some positive things that are happening in people's lives if they're traveling. I have friends that travel and show pictures, and those are kind of cool things to. I get a kick out of the status updates. You know what those are when you change your status. One of my friends made national news. He's a pastor. Actually went to college here at Minnesota, or at Crossroads College, and he's out in Maryland. And he was doing a marriage ceremony. And after they said their vows and exchanged rings, the groom paused and turned around to the audience and said, "Just a second, I need to change my status." And he typed it in during the wedding service. And then everybody clapped. Well, that made national news in the morning the next day, and so they interviewed him for that. Isn't that funny? But that was a few years ago. You know, a lot of people post what's on their mind. Some people, there's not a lot in their minds when they post, but sometimes there's some interesting opinions. But it's a really good way to reconnect with friends as well. I've been out of high school for a long time, and it's been able to reconnect with people, even some of my old college friends, through Facebook. So it's been very, very good in that sense. But it's changed how we relate to people. Even in illness, I think one of the most positive things about Facebook is when somebody's sick, or when there's an injury, or when there's a loss of life. And I know when my son went through surgery with a tumor, we had so many prayer requests and so many interactions on Facebook, even with people that I remember growing up knowing who they were in my little town, but there's people in our little town that were praying for us. That would post, "Hey, we're praying for you, Aaron." And it was just so overwhelming when you feel that support. So lots of positive things. But Facebook has changed how we relate to people. Grace has changed how we relate to people as well. Grace, unmerited favor. I can remember when I first experienced grace, or when I at least understood what that concept was, as I grew up in a Christian family and grew up in the church, and but yet you go and kind of do your own thing. And when you finally realize that God can forgive you no matter what, when you finally realize that that shame and that guilt that you carry around in your life can be freed, can be wiped clean, and that you don't have to worry about that kind of stuff anymore, that's overwhelmingly powerful in a person's life. And it can change their attitudes, it can change their perspectives, it can change their view of themselves, they can change their view of what the world's around them, and it also can change your relationships. I've dealt with people that have been drug dealers and have been violent, and when they found the grace of God and experienced the grace of God, turned into these people that turned their whole lives around and became compassionate people that had a love for people instead of a hate. Grace has the power to transform your relationships. Now, we're going to be looking at a passage in Romans. And in the book of Romans, it's one of the most theologically potent books in the Bible. The book of Romans changed Martin Luther's life. Martin Luther's founded Lutheranism. But it changed his life when he read it for the very first time and understood what grace is all about. Paul spends the first 11 chapters describing, in his letter to this church to Rome, what it means to be living in grace. Some thought that they could live by good morals and be saved, it says. Some thought that they could get through with doing good works. Others thought they could just do it by having the right religion. But Paul explained that since no one is perfect in the eyes of God, and therefore all of us deserve justable wrath, God's justable wrath, in fact, there is nothing that we can do on our part in order to save ourselves. There's nothing that we can do. Only God can do something, and he did. And that's by grace, through faith, then, that we are saved. And so he spends the first 11 chapters talking about that, and then chapter 12, he starts to apply what that means. What does grace mean in your life? How does it affect your life? And that's why he says in 12:1, "Therefore, in view of God's mercy, in view of all that I've been writing to you about, in view of God's mercy, this is what you need to do in your life. This is how your priorities are set. This is how you should think about the world. This is how you should view yourself. This is how you should use your gifts. And this is how you should relate to other people." So the point I want to make today is this, that grace can transform your relationships. Grace can transform your relationships. Good relationships are vital for a good life. A child's relationship to a father is vital for a healthy child growing up. That's such an important relationship. Successful people talk about having mentors in their life that made a positive impact. That's a relationship. You know, when they interviewed these young boys that go around shooting people in colleges, there's a book out there called Lost Boys, and they did an interview, psychological interviews with them. And what they found was that they were exposed to a lot of violence. They didn't have a lot of friends, but one of the common things was they had no significant relationship with an adult. Not one relationship, a significant relationship with an adult of some kind. When people fail those kinds of relationships, it affects us. So relationships are important. When people die, for instance, when I've sat with people on there as they are waiting to meet the Lord, you know what we talk about? We don't talk about their fancy cars. We don't talk about their cabins that they went to every weekend. We don't talk about their homes. We don't talk about their careers. We talk about their family and those that they're going to miss. We talk about their relationships. So relationships are really, really important. And even in the church, 60 to 70, sometimes 80%, you know, we love our church to grow and you want your church to flourish. And you can do fancy things. We can put on a nice song and dance show and really entertain you really well. We can do some really cool advertisings in the community. You can do some events to get people to come in. I know a church that raffled off a Harley Davidson. I'd probably come to that, but yeah, they raffled off a Harley Davidson, and you had to buy a ticket for it. But you can, on that day that you gave it away, you had to bring a non-believer with you on that day. I don't know. That's kind of a hook, and isn't that kind of a? They did it, and it was fine. And somebody got a Harley Davidson. That's okay, I guess. But did you realize that most people influence, especially when it comes to their faith, are influenced by relationships? It was somebody significant in their life that either talked with them about Jesus or gave them an example about Jesus that they wanted to model. 60-70% say, why, when they're asked, why did you become a Christian? It was because of a relationship that I had with someone else. That's how powerful relationships are. And so when we're going to look at grace, how it changes us, I think this is really important for us because we all have relationships. We have relationships with our significant others. We have relationships with our families, our coworkers, our neighbors. And so grace can change all those kinds of relationships. And the church should not only be the context for religious instruction, but we should be relationally innovative as well. We should model what it means to relate with grace as our model. Good relationships are vital for a good spiritual life. And so it's important that we learn these principles. So today, for the rest of the time, I want to look at a passage in Romans 12. We're going to look at verses 9 through 16. And it's an application about how do you apply grace to your relationship. Now, there's a lot of points that we're just going to look at them very quickly. But I just want you to understand how broad grace can be as it influences those around you, those that you relate with. So grace-based relationships. Number one, genuinely, grace says that you would genuinely care for people. Verse 9, it says, Paul says, love must be sincere. The term for love here is agape. Agape love differs from other types of love because it's not dependent upon some kind of uncontrolled inner emotion or desire or need for fulfillment within the one who is showing love. In fact, agape love is motivated by concern and goodwill based on needs of those who will be shown love. It's a choice that we give to other people. And Paul says that this kind of love must be sincere. That it must be without a mask is what that word is translated. It's Hippocrates or hypocrites. Hypocrites was a term used during that day to describe actors. Actors would put on masks and pretend to be someone that they were not. So a hypocrite, of course, is somebody that pretends, that says one thing and lives another life. And in this particular instance, it says this kind of love is not hypocritical love. It is a genuine love, a love that has no masks. It's in making the choice to truly love somebody. You are genuinely concerned for their well-being. It's showing them that you love them as well. It's about action, not just about talking. It is a selfless, sacrificial love that God showed through his son, Jesus Christ, when he willingly gave his life as a sacrifice for our sins, even though we were sinful and his enemies. Again, unmerited favor. This kind of love is a choice. We did not deserve God's love. We did not earn God's love. God simply chose to love us in this way. And so when we love others genuinely, we choose to do so because that's what grace does. Second grace-based relationships is this: live with integrity. Verse 9, hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Hate is a very strong, forceful word. It expresses a strong feeling of horror and implies loathing, abhorrence, and disgust. Cling to is a very strong word as well. It means to be joined together or to be glued together. So we're to be glued together for what is good. Cling to what is good. Hate what is evil. Be in horror of it. Abhor it. Those two terms go together really quite interestingly. I summarize this point as living with integrity. We strive to live that way, the way that the Lord wants us to live. We can be trusted. We do not hurt like others, or we do not sin against others because of what grace has done in our life. And we learn to hate sin. We don't want to do that, and especially when it comes to our relationships. And we hold on tightly to doing the right things because we love what is good. And in relationships, it's always about doing the right thing, even if it costs us something. It's about being honest. It's about being trustworthy. Hate those things that destroy relationships: name-calling, angry emotions, downgrading looks, selfish thinking, demanding your own way, not being polite, purposely hurting others. Those can destroy relationships. They can destroy marriages. They can destroy neighbors. They can destroy co-workers as well. But if you live with integrity and live honestly and trustworthy and respectfully, then that can transform relationships. Number three, grace-based relationships treats others like family. It says in verse 10, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. The word be devoted is an instinctive kind of love, like a parent for their child. Brotherly love comes from the word philadelphos, or philadelphos. It is the kind of love that siblings have for each other, brotherly love. Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Now, we're to treat each other like family, not dysfunctional family, but like family. We are now in Christ, and so that means there's no more barriers. So there's no race or racial barriers any longer within a church setting. In fact, the Bible talks about becoming a new race of people. You are both slave or free, from this land or from that land, women or men. But God creates us, God makes us one. And now when we look at each other, all we see is Christ. We are a new race of people. And so we are now in Christ. So there's no barriers. So treat each other like family. They're like family bonds. You do special things for family. We have a great relationship with churches in our community, and we have some brother and sister churches, like Hope Summit Christian Church is a sister church. And so we share things with each other. They borrow our van, and we're going to borrow their van this week. We'll go over there if I run out of communion stuff because I forgot to pick it up. I'll run over there, steal their stuff, and then send them a note, and they're fine with that, evidently. I always give it back. But anyway, you build those kinds of relationships. Churches are not in competition. I don't know if you know that or not. We're not in competition. We're all serving Christ, and so we need to help each other and encourage one another in that way. We need to treat each other like family. That's when you can travel to another country, and when you run into another Christ follower, you've never met them before, but all of a sudden you're embracing each other because you're family. You are one in Christ. When I was went to Zimbabwe in 2008, I went to see my good friends, Fani and Martha Nyamatora, and they greeted us. Again, we were for the very first time, and when we drove up, there was whistles and drums, and there was clapping, and they were singing songs as we drove into the complex. And they all came out, and everybody was happy and excited to see us. And we walked away. When we were walking away to go to where we were, Fani grabbed my hand and started holding my hand. Walking down, I'm going like, what? What's that? We didn't know about that. But in their culture, that's a friendship, and that's family. And so we walked hand in hand going to the church. But that's what you do because you're family. So treat each other with family. Long time ago, a good friend of mine, we had a church, he invited a bunch of people over for church, for a lunch, or for supper at night. And so he's in the kitchen, and he's making spaghetti sauce, and he's stirring it. He takes them out, eats from the spoon, and he puts it back in again. And then he goes into the refrigerator, pulls out some milk, drinks out of the milk, puts it back on, puts it in again. I go, what are you doing? And he's a real good friend of mine. He goes, what? I go, what are you doing? You just ate it. He goes, we're family, right? We're family. I go, no, not that close. It made me leery about anything I touched in his house after that. Number four, Grace-based relationships makes you think about others first. In verse 10, honor one another above yourself. The phrase can mean to esteem others more highly than yourself, or to outdo one another in showing honor. I like that, to outdo one another in showing honor. Both are very, very good descriptions. It does not mean that we're going to develop a bad self-image about ourselves. Oh, you're so much better than me. You're just the best. It's not that way. It just means that you're focusing your attention and thinking about how can I build up that other person? What can I do to really make them feel well? It simply means that we treat one another with genuine respect and courtesy and unselfishness. It also means that we think about others first, about how they might feel, about how they might respond, about how they might be disappointed, and it just makes you aware of someone around you. Sometimes we can be a bull in a china shop in our relationships. We come and we start blowing this and we knock down that and we don't think about anybody else around us. And this is simply thinking about them. It's like opening a door for someone. Sometimes I'm kind of a, once in a while I can be naughty, in a good way, but not in a good way. But I like to open doors for people because I'm thinking, you know, if there's an older lady coming in, I'll open the door so they can come in. I don't need to be first in line, so I'm going to run through the door and get in line at a pizza place, so I'll open the door for somebody else. So sometimes people don't think that way. So I'll have people come open the door, and then they just kind of shut it behind them. So I purposely run into it, like this. And then they turn around and go, oh, my goodness. I said, it's okay. It's okay like this. I'll be fine, okay? It's just a little way to help them understand. So I can be a booger sometime that way. But think about others. That's the whole point of it, right? Or like when you're these are just little pet peeves that you get to hear from. It's people, I know Walmart's parking lots are very, very busy, but when there's an older person walking across the street, don't try to get through before they get you. Stop. Think about others. I should be a Walmart police control, something like that. Here's an important phrase that I want you to remember. Life isn't all about you. It isn't all about you. So make it a habit to make sure everyone around you feels much better about themselves when you're in their presence. Make it a habit that when somebody else is in your presence, that when they leave your presence, they feel better about themselves. That's what that means. Build them up. Encourage them. Number 5, build each other up spiritually. This is another about grace-based relationships. Verse 11, never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Zeal means to apply oneself with diligence. It means don't be lazy in your spiritual life. Spiritual fervor means to bubble over or to boil over, to burn with passion. It's used to describe water boiling or metal glowing with heat. It means that we should be passionate about serving the Lord and carrying out his mission in the world. It means that we should always look for ways to help others become passionate about the Lord as well. I think this is really, really, really important in families. Mom and dad, the kids need to see you burn passionately about serving the Lord and about studying the Bible and about going to church, those kinds of things. You're instilling them into the life of the church. You're the ones that are doing that. And so it's really, really important that they see your passion. You know, I can see my mom and dad weren't just cheerleaders in a sense, like, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo, we get to go to church. But they always made us go to church. And they always made us appreciate different things. They also, my mom would always have her Bible out studying on her kitchen table because she was passionate about God's word in her life. And so that, even though I didn't act like it for a while, that was ingrained in all of us, in all of our kids. All my family are Christians and their families are Christians as well. And so it's important for us to understand that. So build each other up in spiritual fervor. Number 6, maintain a positive attitude. It says, verse 12, be joyful in hope, be patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Because of God's grace, there are some things that happen in our life when we receive Jesus Christ in faith. We've received forgiveness of sins, value and meaning and purpose. We've received value and love and acceptance. We are free from spiritual oppression and addiction, power to overcome sin, face our circumstances, healthy habits and finances and relationships and self-image, help for today, hope for tomorrow, all these different phrases that we use to describe what that relationship does for us. So those are some pretty cool things in your life when you think about it. And these are not just wishful thinking, but promises from God and God's promises always come true. Positive people. That's why we need to be positive people. And positive people are a lot easier to be around, aren't they? Than negative people. You know negative folks in your life, and it drains you. It drains you of your energy. So he's talking about maintaining a positive attitude. I had a friend of mine that when we were going to Bible college here, we went up to the Boundary Waters on a trip, and it was just him and I. We were going to do some fishing. And he was an interesting character. He was a good man, but he was a little Danny Downer, put it that way, okay? So everything was all great. You know, we're driving up there and said, oh, great, I hope the weather's going to be okay. It's probably going to rain. I'm going like, oh, okay, whatever. So all the way up there, we're talking, and it's always like, oh, great. So we finally get camping, and he goes, oh, and he said it again, oh, great, I probably get wet, or my tent will probably leak tonight. We get up in the morning going fishing, and he goes, great, you know, no bite. Well, I don't know if we're going to catch anything. This is constantly, the whole trip. And so, thank the Lord, it was only a day and a half. And so then we got in the car and I was driving home. I had a little Volkswagen Rabbit, 1979 Volkswagen diesel Rabbit, and we had this yellow banana canoe on top of it driving down the road. And so I was passing a truck, and as I was passing a truck, he goes, great, there was a bales of hay on this truck. He goes, great. So that if we're gonna, he starts holding on to the side. He goes, great, it's probably going to fall over. And I go, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it. You're driving me nuts. And then he pouted the whole way home after that. But you got to be positive. It was all negative. It's frustrating. I felt sorry for him. That's an attitude. But it can ruin your day. I haven't seen him for a long time. I hope he's doing good. I hope he's doing good. Maintain a positive attitude. God is on our side, and we need to start acting like that. Right? Number 7, be generous. It says, share with God's people who are in need and practice hospitality. Practice hospitality is being generous to strangers. But in Paul's day, it was important that you show hospitality to strangers because they didn't have hotels like we did. For 24-hour gas stations or rest stops, they didn't have things like that. So practice means to run after, to chase, to pursue, or to earnestly aspire, or to seek after. That is how our attitude should be when it comes to being generous to other people. And God wants his community to be generous towards each other. It's not only being able to give to each other, but to inwardly feel for those in need who have little or a sense of common ownership. But it's working together, serving one another, to be generous to one another. Number 8, offer grace instead of grudges. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Bless means wishing people goodwill. This is one of the hardest things to do, but we are able to do it. Otherwise, Paul wouldn't have mentioned that we could do it. Grace is unmerited favor in showing that. And that's why we would have to give someone, we do that even to people that are persecuting us. They don't deserve it, but yet we still give it. That's offering grace instead of grudges. But there's something powerful when in spite of how we are being treated, that we treat them with respect and dignity and wish them well. Remember during World War II, enemy soldiers would beg to be captured by American soldiers by how they treated their prisoners. Some other countries treated their prisoners very harshly and very unfairly, but they begged that the Americans would come and take them. Now, we're not perfect people. By far, Americans are not perfect people. But we've learned how to offer in grace, even in the midst of enemies, how we can offer grace instead of grudges, and to rebuild those countries that were our enemies at one time and turn them into what they are today. Grace goes against our human nature to fight back and even to get even. Number 9, feel for each other. Verse 15, rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. One author writes, love never stands aloof from other people's joys or pains. Love identifies with them, sings with them, and suffers with them. Love enters deeply into their experiences and their emotions, their laughter and their tears, and feels solidarity with them, whatever their mood. That was written by John Stott in one of his books. So feel for each other. Have compassion for each other. It allows you to come and build each other up and to hold each other up. One of my cousins, her husband just retired, and a few months after that had some terrible strokes. And one major stroke and then another one that took his life. So within 6 months, after building his whole life to be at home and farm with his son and to spend the rest of their time and doing what they choose to do instead of what they had to do, he dies. And so it was tragic. And so we went to the funeral in this little country church, and his wife was in the middle of the room, and she's a very, her husband is very quiet and very well-spoken, and you'd listen to them, he talks slow. She's just like this, but an awesome, she was a teacher, and she was just fantastic. But she really needed people. And so when people would come in, she would just come in, and they would come and give her a hug, and literally, she would throw herself after them, and they would hold her up, because they were feeling empathy with her. And that's what church should be like. We should hold each other up when we're going through those very, very difficult. So, and in the same time, we should rejoice with people when good things are happening in their life as well, because they're family. And so when good things happen to them, then good things happen to us. Number 10, don't be grumpy. Live in harmony with each other, verse 16. Grumpy people are frustrating. I've dealt with a lot of grumpy people in churches, and I don't really know why they're grumpy. Jesus is king. When we die, we get to go to heaven. We were to base our relationships. Love is patient, kind, envy is not boastful, irritable, rude, or rude. That's how we are to love each other. So why is there grump? Part of our core values, no grumps allowed. I know it's no perfect people allowed, but we talk about it as we all have a bad day. I have a lot of bad hair days. If you get what I mean. No, we all have bad days, but it should never be taken out on your people. And so it says, live in harmony with each other. Try to figure out we should be peacemakers and not destroyers. Living in harmony literally means think the same way towards one another or live in agreement with one another. It's a choice. It's a choice that we make. We can disagree, but we don't need to be disagreeable. So don't be grumpy with each other. All right. I'm missing a page. What's the next slide? Treat each other with dignity. Treat each other with dignity. Do not be proud. Here it is. Found it. But be willing to associate with people of low positions. This simply means don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to. One person writes, snobs are obsessed with questions of status, with stratification of society into upper and lower classes. It's a division into distinctions of tribe and caste, and so with the company they keep. As followers of Christ, we must be willing to associate with anyone. All of us are equal in the eyes of God. And we will be, we've been working with under-resourced people for many, many years, since we started. That's why we started this church 9 years ago this fall. And I've had people say, as we're dealing with people in trailer parks, and they're lovely people. We have this stereotype that we put together in our minds about who's supposed to live where and what, right? And I had somebody tell me, I said, Aaron, we'd love to come to your church, but we don't know if we cannot relate with those kinds of people. I go, what do you mean you can't relate? They're human beings. They talk and walk and they brush their teeth like we do. What do you mean you can't relate? But it's this idea of treating people with dignity, and loving them as Jesus would love them. Every person that we see is of value to God. Every person we see is of value to God. We are to treat each other as we want others to treat us. So treat each other with dignity. All right, I know those are 11 things and you're going to memorize those and have them down by tomorrow. Then my point is this, that grace can change your relationships. All those different areas can transform how you treat other people. It can change how you do it, but it starts with grace. If we didn't have grace in your life, then who cares, right? If we didn't have Jesus in your life, who cares? Why treat each other? But because of what Jesus has done in our life and because of that grace coming into our life, we treat each other differently. The bottom line is this, that we need to offer grace like Jesus offers grace to me. And prior to this passage, the section that we looked at in Romans 12, verse 3 says, for the grace given to me, and then Paul writes, for the grace given to me, thus this is what I'm going to instruct you about. This is what I encourage you to be about. It's because of God's grace in our life. And this is what our relationship should be like with our family, with our friends, with our neighbors and our coworkers. And this is what church should be like. This is how we are to treat others in our church setting. And we are to practice these things. And the really good way to do that is not only in our large group or large gatherings, but in our small groups that we have meeting, that you get together and you learn how to live by grace. And You learn that sometimes people irritate, but you love them anyways. Sometimes people say crazy, you love them anyways. We have to model it in the church if the world's going to take notice out there. How we treat each other is vitally important. So important, that's one of the first things that Paul writes about in response to God's grace for us. So how do you do? How are you guys doing in your relationships? Do you need to make some changes? God can transform your relationships when you apply the grace that was given to you to those that you come in contact with.